Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. I think we can get started. It's a pleasure. You'll tell me if I pronounce it correctly, to welcome Rav Asher Finkelstein, who is, as you may have heard, it's actually a pleasure. I was in yeshiva with his father, and he was in yeshiva with my son. So I think it's very beautiful. I want to thank really my son-in-law, who suggested Rav Asher as a speaker. He is currently learning up for, and I guess that's you're in the Kollel Elyon, what the Baron Kollel, and he's grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, where his father's been rabbi for many years, and learned in Yeshivat Har Etzion, a degree in philosophy from Yeshiva, and he's been learning with his Rebbe and father-in-law, Rav Michael Rosenzweig, for the last 7 years in Yeshiva, and he's learning in the Kollel Elyon. It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to have new people, young people, to teach Torah to our audience. So, Bakasha, Rav Asher, a pleasure to welcome you.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, you can start.
Do people have the source sheets themselves, or do I need to share the screen?
I posted in the
Okay,
chat
good.
box. It's up to you if you want to. People generally like, I think, when you share your screen, you go back and forth a little bit, but people can also access, sources if you don't
Okay.
share your screen. I leave it to you a little bit to the side as the muggy
Okay.
shear.
Sure. All right. Okay, so, if you ask most people what Parshas Tazria, this week's Parsha, and next week, Metzora, are all about, most people will tell you it's all about Tzaras, the infamous biblical skin disease of unknown, precise quality. Some people call it leprosy, etc. However, that's missing the larger picture of the broad scope of topics that are really discussed in these parshas. So at the beginning of the source sheet, I gave you a little chart just describing some of the basic topics relating to Tumah Vetahara, purity and impurity, that come up starting in last week's Parsha Shemini and going on to this week and next week, Tazria The true common denominator of all the topics discussed in Tazria and Metzora could really be termed bodily impurity. In these parshas, we really discuss various forms of bodily impurity, prime among them tzaras, the leprosy-like skin affliction, but also the situation of yoledes, giving birth, zav, abnormal male discharge, balkeri, nida, zava, and the mitzvos for these people to bring various korbanos, sacrifices, at the conclusion of their impurity. Last week's Parsha Shmini discussed a different type of impurity, impurity through contact with impure things, different types of dead animals, etc. And we also have an element of the mitzvah of mikvah, the way that one can be purified in Parsha Shmini. So we'll discuss later another important common denominator between a lot of the categories of impurity and sacrifices that are discussed in Tazria Metzora. But for now, I want to start by discussing the question of whether one's status as pure or impure in halacha, tameh or tahor, is subject to command. Are we commanded to purify ourselves when we become tameh? Are we commanded to avoid impurity? Or is it really optional, unless you're planning on going into the Beis HaMikdash, into the temple, or eating sacrifices or truma, other sanctified things? Is Tumah Vetahara, is purity and impurity an independent category in halacha, or is it really just a stepping stone? Is it really just a prerequisite for the ability to come in contact with the temple, sacrifices, and sanctified things? So if you look at the verses, from a number of verses from last week's Parsha Shmini, in the simple pshat, you get the impression that we are prohibited from coming in contact with impure things. So source one, Vayikra Yud Aleph, don't eat these impure carcasses, and don't touch the carcasses. They are impure to you. Similarly, the Torah uses even stronger language Source 2, regarding Shrutzim, the creepy crawly things, Al Tishaktu Isnafshu Sechem B'chol Asheretz HaShoreitz, don't defile yourself with all these creepy crawlers, Lo Titamu B'hem V'nitz Meisem Ba, and you shall not become impure by them and become impure through them. Probably not the greatest translation, but that'll do for now. Because I am Hashem your God, and you shall sanctify yourselves and be sanctified, and don't defile yourselves with these impure creeping crawlers, because I took you out of the land of Egypt. The Gemara in Bava Metzia goes so far as to say, why is God referencing the exodus from Egypt here in the context of not becoming impure to Shrotzim, or not eating Shrotzim, not eating creeping crawlers? So the Gemara says, L'chidatani de'ver b'yishmael, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'malei lo ha'elesi es Yisrael mi'mitzrayim, Ela b'shvil davar zeh, she'en mitamim b'shrotzim dayim. If I had only taken the Jews out of Egypt for this one thing, that they wouldn't defile themselves with shrotzim, with creeping creatures, that would be enough. So apparently it's really important to Hashem that we shouldn't defile ourselves in this way by coming in contact, or at least eating. We'll see. That's part of the question. Things like shrotzim, impure things. So that's one side of the equation. I could bring a lot more evidence, which we don't have time to go into, that there's something problematic with coming in contact with impure things. And it is inherently problematic, not just if you're interested in going to the Beis HaMikdash. However, the mainstream halacha seems to reject this approach. And a number of these verses were understood in different ways by the sages. So a prime example is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, source 4, quoting this pasuk, "Uvenivlasam lo sigo," and you shall not touch these carcasses. So ask the Gemara, "Yochel yu Yisrael musharin al maga nevela?" Perhaps all the Israelites are commanded to avoid touching in nevela the carcasses of certain animals. Talmud lomar emor al kohanim b'nei Aharon. No, the pasuk says a few parashios later, tell the kohanim, the priests, the sons of Aaron, that they should not defile themselves by coming in contact with the dead. B'nei Aaron musharim, b'nei Yisrael ein musar. So we see from there that only kohanim, only priests, are commanded to avoid defilement through impurity. If when it comes to impurity by coming in contact with the human dead, which is one of the highest forms of impurity, nonetheless, only Kohanim have to avoid it, but regular Jews do not. So then, certainly lesser forms of impurity, there's no problem for any Jew to come in contact with that. So then why does the pasuk say, don't touch these carcasses? Sounds like it's saying, do not become impure. Baregel. The Gemara reinterprets this to refer specifically to the Shalosh Regalim, the three pilgrimage festivals, when all of Klal Yisrael is supposed to come to the Mikdash. During that time, there's a rule, Chayavan Latayar Atzmo Baregel, that for the three pilgrimage festivals, one is supposed to purify themselves and remain pure. So the Gemara greatly limits the problem with becoming impure here. Similarly, the Sifra, the Midrash Halacha in Source 5, also reinterprets this verse. It suggests, perhaps there's a prohibition to touch a nevela, to touch these dead carcasses. Tamu lomar lo eleti tamau. They say, no, the next part of the verse seems to say, and you shall or you can defile yourself, make yourself impure. Ask the Midrash, is this saying that it's a good idea? The Torah is commanding us to become impure? No. Tamil Amar of Nevelsam Losigo. So the Torah on the one hand is telling us don't touch it, but the Torah is also seemingly telling us you can touch it. So the Midrash says, what must come out is that it's a Rishus. Whether you touch something impure or not is up to you. It's really optional. Rashi in Yuma in Source 6 says a similar thing. He says when the verse tells us don't defile yourself with shrotzim, with creeping crawlers, it's really referring to eating. That you're not allowed to eat shrotzim. But the notion of not becoming impure by touching them, that is not a commandment. Sharei Ein Yisrael Musarin Militame, because Israelites are not prohibited from becoming impure. And he quotes the analysis from the other Gemara. The Rambam, Maimonides, in his book of mitzvos, in source 7, goes even further. He counts a mitzvah of immersing oneself in the mikveh. However, there are different types of mitzvos in the Rambam. Rabbi Menachem Liebtag likes to call this the distinction between commandments and precepts. Not everything that's a mitzvah is a command that thou shalt do some, you know, X. Some mitzvos are just laws. And that's exactly what the Rambam explains about the law of immersion in a mikvah. The mitzvah is, source 7, Shetzivanu shenitbol b'mei mikvah v'az nitaher. We should immerse in a mikvah, and then we will be purified by that from whatever type of impurity we may have contracted. V'ein hakavana sheyechayev kol tamei sheyetaher al koponim. Says the Rambam, the point of this mitzvah is not that someone impure is obligated to purify himself in the mikvah. V'ulam, himisha yirtzeh lihitaher mitumaso. All it means is that if you want to purify yourself, hinelo yushlam lo ela b'mikvah b'mayim v'azitar. Then the Torah is telling us that the only way to accomplish that is via immersion in the mikvah. But if someone touched a sheretz and they want to remain in their state of tumas sheretz, of impurity by contact with a creeping crawler, then that's their choice, unless they want to go to the Beis HaMikdash or they want to eat sacrifices. And obviously when it comes to Nida, there's also an important element of Isser V'Heter, other ramifications that would require her to go to the mikvah. But in general, says the Rambam, there's no command that anyone who is impure has to go to the mikvah. There's really just the Torah giving us a mechanism, a legal mechanism, and an option of how to become pure if you want to. The Rambam goes even further in source 8, in the end of the laws of impure foods. Rambam says, Kolakasu batoro v'divrei kabbalah milchos tuma v'tahara. Everything that the Torah says about laws of purity and impurity, eino ela le'inyan mikdash v'kadshav, which we must ma'aser sheni bilva. It's only in terms of, it's only relevant to the temple, the sacrifices, and eating truma and other sanctified foods. Sharei, he hears that tmeim likanes lemikdash ulecha kodesh, because if you're impure, then you can't go into the temple. Aval hachulin ein ma'aser kla, but when it comes to unsanctified things, there's no prohibition for them to be impure at all. Elamutr lechol chulin tmeim, you're allowed to eat mundane food when it's impure. The Rambam even goes so far as to say, if so, what does it even mean when we say that a mundane food is impure? If there's zero practical ramification to that. He says, yeah, but really the whole point of that is limnos yimenu l'tshumah v'l'kodesh. The only relevancy of that, the only relevance of that is if that impure food were to then touch a sanctified food, now it would become relevant. Then he goes on to say, you know, you're allowed to touch anything impure if you want to. It's only Kohanim and Nazarites that are prohibited from becoming impure through the dead, but everything else is permissible. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch, medieval book of mitzvos, he tempers this sentiment a bit. He says, Mikol makom ein zeh midas hachasidim. It's not so pious, v'anshei maaseh. People who are on the highest level, it's not the greatest thing. Li'os mitumaim betumasa. It's not so great to be impure. Ketumah me'usa v'tara uva. Because there is a certain negativity associated with impurity, and we love the state of purity. Nafshu shaladam is'alam is'dacheches v'tara. And perhaps one's soul itself is somehow elevated and purified by being in a state of purity. However, as we've seen, the mainstream halachic approach seems to be that tuma and tahara, purity or impurity, are really just optional states. They seem to only really be relevant, like the Rambam says, for one who wants to come in contact with the temple, the sacrifices, or other sanctified things. That's what I'll call the picture in Parsha Shmini after you've gone through the rabbinic tradition. However, moving on to the next section of the source sheet, starting with this week's parsha, Tezriya Metzora, we encounter a strikingly different element. In this week's parsha and the next, we will see the Torah commanding people who are in the process of purification from various bodily forms of impurity that they are required to bring a sacrifice to complete their purification process. And there are really four types of bodily impurity. As we'll see, this is going to be an important grouping in halacha that come out from Parshios Tezriya Metzora, where the Torah tells you that you have to bring a korban, and the Torah uses a phrase of v'chiper alav mitumaso, or something to that effect in each of the four. So when it comes to a yoledes, woman who gives birth, a metzora, someone who had this biblical skin disease, zav, the abnormal male discharge, zava, the abnormal female discharge. So these four people, the Torah commands that they have to bring special sacrifices, each one a different type of sacrifice. They're similar, but not exactly the same sacrifice for each. And through that, the Torah says, vitaher or vitahira, through that you will achieve some sort of kapara, some sort of atonement, and some sort of purification. And the rabbis understood, the halacha tells us, that what this means is that you're not, even though you already went to the mikvah, so you're mostly pure, you still haven't achieved the highest level of purity to be allowed to eat kudshin, to be allowed to eat sacrifices until you bring this korban, until you bring this sacrifice. And here's the funny thing in light of what we've been discussing until now, these sacrifices seem to be obligatory. Just to take an example, and if you look in the formulations of the Rambam that I give you in the next couple of sources, in Maimonides, both in his Sefer HaMitzvos and in his code, the way the Rambam phrases these mitzvos is, take an example in source 10, Shetzivanu she'akriv korban kol ish zav k'nisrapei mizavo. We are commanded that any zav, any man who has had these abnormal discharges, should bring the following sacrifice when he is healed from his state of ziva. V'hu mechusar kapara ad she'akrivei. And until he brings that sacrifice, he is mechusar kapara. He is missing atonement, literally. In other words, he is in this halachic category called mechusar kapara, someone who has not yet brought his sacrifice, and he cannot eat kudshim, he cannot eat sacrifices until that time. And you'll see similar formulations. I'm not going to read through all of them in the next few sources. The Rambam seems to say very clearly, and this is, I think, the simple understanding of the halacha. I've yet to see any source against this, that it's obligatory to bring one sacrifice upon the completion of the purification process from these four states of bodily impurity. And all these four, mechusare kapara, these four people who are missing atonement until they bring their sacrifice, are discussed in these coming parashios, Tezriya Metzora. So this raises the obvious question. If, from everything we've seen until now in the halacha, the approach seems to be that whether one remains impure or becomes pure is optional, unless you want to go to the temple or something like that, why all of a sudden, by these four situations of bodily impurity, do we see what seems to be an obligation, a requirement, to bring a sacrifice to complete the purification process? So one way one could approach this is to say that maybe there's other elements to these sacrifices, to these korbanos, beyond their function as part of the purification process. And one could see this in some of the suggestions made by medieval commentators, by the Rishonim. For example, I gave you in source 16 and 17. I apologize, I didn't have the chance to translate all these, but I'll explain. The Sefer HaBatim, Rav David HaKochavi, medieval Provençal halachic authority, he explains that these sacrifices aren't just to remove the impurity. They're also to purify one's soul, to atone, to help one rise above whatever spiritual issues or religious issues may have been involved in getting one into this state of impurity. So the Zav, the person who has this abnormal male discharge, maybe he was too involved in some aspect of his material existence, and maybe that's what led to this state of impurity. And perhaps these korbanos, these sacrifices that he's required to bring, don't just purify him in a strict halachic sense, but also atone for whatever spiritual issues may have brought upon him the state of impurity in the first place, and help his spiritual persona rise above that state. Similarly, the Sefer HaChinuch, another medieval book of mitzvos, he suggests, Mishorshei HaMitzvah, Kshetisor mitoch HaPula, Losis Hoda LaKadosh Baruch Hu. He suggests a different element to these sacrifices, that, again, these aren't only purification sacrifices. They also have another element. The Sefer HaChinuch understands that these sacrifices come to express hodah, thanksgiving to God for healing a person or keeping them healthy and allowing them to recover from these situations of birth or of being afflicted with various abnormalities. And because these are also korbanos, sacrifices of thanksgiving, then I can understand a little better why they are obligatory, because they aren't just mechanisms to purify oneself, like going to the mikveh, let's say. They also come for another purpose. However, I think the fact that these sacrifices, which again are seemingly primarily about purification, are obligatory, stems from a deeper place and can really only be understood with further halachic background and delving into the next section in our source sheet, what I want to call the mystery of the Mechusare Kapara. So again, we've begun to explain that these four cases of bodily impurity that come up in these coming parashios, Zav, Zava, Yoledes, Mitzora, the abnormal male discharge, abnormal female discharge, woman who gives birth, and the person afflicted with Tsaras, the skin disease, they are grouped together in halacha in this category known as Mechusare Kapara, people who are missing atonement, that until they bring their sacrifice to complete their purification, they are missing something, and therefore they can't eat kudshin, they can't eat sacrifices, until they bring that sacrifice, that korban, to complete their purification. So the Mishnah in Meseches Krisus, in source 18, says there are four Mechusare Kapara, like we just explained, Elohein, Zav, Zava, Yoledes, Mitzora. However, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov disagrees. And he adds two more to the list of Mechusare Kapara. He says, also a ger, a convert, is also called Mechusar Kapara, missing atonement, until he brings his conversion sacrifice. And a Nazirite, who's completing his Nazirus, is also called Mechusar Kapara, until he brings his concluding sacrifices to end the state of being a Nazir. And until then, he can't return to drinking wine and cutting his hair and becoming impure to the dead. So we have a debate among the Tanaim. Who's included in this special club, this special halachic category of Mechusar Kapara? The mainstream approach is that there are only four, these sources of bodily, people who experience bodily impurity in these coming parashios. And Rabbi Ben Yaakov is adding on two more, the convert and the Nazirite, until they bring their sacrifice. So what exactly are they arguing about? Well, the Gemara there, in source 19, explains a little bit more. Tanakama mai taima lo tani ger. According to the mainstream approach in the Tanoim, the sages of the Mishnah, why don't they include a convert in this list, in this group? Ki katani midam de mishri lemeichal bekodsh. Ger ki kamaisi korban lachshuri nafshe lemeichal bekoho. The Tanakama says that Mechusare Kapara, this category of people missing atonement, only refers to people who are missing a sacrifice that will allow them to eat kudshim, to eat sacrifices. A convert, his sacrifice is brought for a different purpose, to allow himself to enter into the community. This is a very unclear phrase, very interesting phrase, lemeal b'kohol. There's a debate among the Rishonim, among the medieval commentators, what exactly it means. Some understand that until the convert brings this sacrifice, he was not allowed to marry a Jew. By the way, important to know, the Gemara says that we derive from the Psukim about Gerus that conversion can take place in any generation, Lidoro Seichem. Therefore, when there's no temple and it's impossible to bring the sacrifice, then the bringing of the sacrifice is not ma'akev. It doesn't affect his halakhic status, and he's a full Jew without the sacrifice. But in the days of the Mikdash, the days of the temple, the ger, the convert, would need to bring this sacrifice to allow him to be fully entered into the community. Again, we'll see, some people think that it actually refers to the ability to eat kudshim, to eat sacrifices, but not in the same way as the people who are becoming purified from bodily impurity. It's a different type of sacrifice, says the Tanakhama, therefore it doesn't belong in this category. The Nazir my time alotan. And why does the Tanakhama not include the Nazirite in this category of Mechusarei Kafara? Sof, Nazir nami, kimaisi korban lishtaruye lemishrei yayin dechulut. Because a Nazirite also is a different type of korban. That korban, at the conclusion of his Nazirus, is really just to allow him to drink wine. It's not about some sort of purification to allow you to eat sacrifices. It's really just about ending his state of being a Nazir and allowing him to drink plain old wine. For Belezer, Diktani Nazir, Lemishrei Nafshi, Nisninami Nazir Tameh. And according to Belezer and Yaakov, who's more expansive in what we include in this category of Mechusar Kapara, why wouldn't he also include a Nazir Tameh, in a Nazirite who became impure to the dead? He has to bring special sacrifices that relate to purity and impurity. Maybe that should be one of the Mechusar Kapar as well. The Gemara answers, Hika Maisi Karban, Lemechal Alei Naziris Bitaru. No, that sacrifice is about something else. It's about allowing the Nazirite to enter into or to re-enter his state of pure Nazirus, of being a pure Nazirite. So even Rabbi Lezman Yaakov thinks that the special sacrifice brought by an impure Nazir doesn't belong in this category of Mechusar Kapar. But even after reading this Gemara, we're still left a little bit in the dark what exactly this category of Mechusar Kapara is all about, and what the Tanoim are really debating when they're debating whether to add the convert and the Nazirite to the list of Mechusarei Kapara. Adding to the problem, there doesn't seem to be, at least according to many commentators, there doesn't seem to be any practical ramification to this debate among the Tanoim. According to the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnah, there actually is one practical difference, that the Tanakhama, the first Tana, thinks that a convert is allowed to eat sacrifices even before he brings his special conversion sacrifice, whereas Rabbi Elazar thinks that he is prohibited to eat sacrifices until he brings his Korban Hager. However, according to the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah and his code, source 21, and according to Rashi in source 22, even both the Rabbanon, both the majority of the sages and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov actually agree that a convert is not allowed to eat kudshim until he brings a sacrifice. But they're just arguing about whether to call him a mechusar kapara. And that's definitely true when it comes to their debate about the Nazirite. Everyone agrees that the Nazirite cannot drink wine and cut his hair, etc. Well, cutting his hair is part of the purification process, but cannot cut his hair, yeah. Cannot end his state of Nazirus until he brings the sacrifices. Yeah, I don't think he can put his hair either. Either way. So there's no practical debate. The only debate between them is whether to call the Nazir a Mechusar Kapara, whether these two people, the convert and the Nazirite, are in this special halachic club and category of Mechusar Kapara, people who are missing atonement. The Tiferes Yisrael, a 19th century Mishnah commentator, was so bothered by this, this lack of any practical ramification to this debate in the Mishnah, that he made a very desperate move. Source 23, he says, Tmihani, laharama vitosvos, but my pligi tanakama belezmen Yaakov. What are these sages of the Mishnah really debating if there's no practical ramification? Umay nafkamina imikri mechusar kapara olo. What's the nafkamina? Right, that's a question we classically ask in yeshivas. What's the practical ramification of this debate? So desperate is Tiferes Yisrael that he then suggests, nearly dinafkamina inodar benozir almanas sheger benozir mechusar kapara mikri. This is what's known in yeshivas as the last resort, the nafkamina linadar. When you can't think of any possible practical ramification to a theoretical question, then your last resort is to say, well, if someone took a vow hinged, conditional upon this theoretical question, then that would create a practical halakhic ramification to this theoretical question. So Tiferes Yisrael feels desperate enough to make that move in this case, but that suggestion doesn't last for long. He says that his son pointed out to him that actually there are many cases in the Talmud where the Gemara raises theoretical questions, particularly questions about how to define certain categories, even if there isn't any clear practical ramification to it. In other words, studying Torah and Talmud isn't just about figuring out practically what to do, the halacha lemaisa. We're also trying to understand the concepts of the Torah and the conceptual categories of the Torah, which can shed a lot of light on the deeper roots of the mitzvos and of the halacha itself. And to that end, the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov seem to be debating over here something very deep about this special category of mechusare kapara and who's included in it. At this point, I need to quickly raise five questions about this category of mechusare kapara, of people who are missing atonement, to help us get down to the roots of the matter and hopefully understand this debate between Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And if we're lucky, then we'll also be able to understand, perhaps, why these sacrifices are obligatory, even though purification processes are generally optional. So, five questions to think about. Number one, we've already begun to address. Are these sacrifices, these korbanos of mechusare kapara, of people who are missing atonement, truly obligatory? Let's say someone isn't interested in eating sacrifices, eating kach. Do they still have to bring these sacrifices of mechusare kapara? Again, we suggest that it seems that the answer is yes. But let's just keep that question in mind. Number two, what if someone knows that they're never going to eat kudshim? Again, you have to find a practical ramification for that. Could be that someone who's mesu echav machmas mila, someone who's unfortunately stuck in the status of being uncircumcised for medical reasons, might never be able to eat kudshim. So someone for whom there's never going to be a practical ramification to whether he brings this sacrifice or not, does he still have to bring the sacrifice of mechusar kapara? If someone is not going to benefit from the status of purity engendered by this sacrifice, do they have to bring the sacrifice at all? Question number three. Someone who's mechusar kapara, someone who hasn't yet brought these special sacrifices, is not allowed to eat kachim, sacrifices, and probably a din drabanan, probably a rabbinic decree, if he touches kachim, sacrifices, then they will become defiled, impure, pasul. So, is the person who's mechusar kapara, he's also not allowed to walk into the temple, to the mikdash. Is the person who's mechusar kapara really tameh, really impure? Again, we're speaking here about someone who already went to the mikvah. He already did the basic purification. Not only that, he already had Ha'erev Shemesh. The sun already set after he went to the mikvah, which generally really concludes the purification process. He's just missing this extra step of the sacrifices. Is he really tameh? Does he really have a tiny bit of impurity left from his original impurity? Or perhaps are we dealing here with more like a virtual impurity, a as if type of impurity? Again, this state of impurity on Mechusar Kippurim is really only relevant to eating sacrifices and to touching sacrifices and to entering the temple. But for all the other normal dinim, all the normal laws of purity and impurity, he's already pure. So perhaps one could consider the possibility that he isn't even truly impure. He's not truly tameh. This is just a tuma-like status, an impurity-like status that he has until he brings these sacrifices. Question number four. If the Mechusar Kippurim is really tameh, then we can understand that he has a problem, he's impure, and the Torah gives him the op, you know, the possibility of bringing these sacrifices as a solution to that problem to purify. Maybe we need to stand on our heads. Could we think about it the opposite way? Could it be that perhaps the Torah decreed that he should bring these sacrifices, and the failure to bring these sacrifices is what triggers the state of Tumah, this impurity-like state, a possibility we should consider. Finally, let's consider one very important halacha that relates to these sacrifices of Mechusar Kippurim, of the people who are, again, missing atonement. If someone owes a series of these korbanos, so let's say a woman gave birth five times, she has not yet brought any of her sacrifices, korbanos yoledes. So does the Mishnah tells us that she does not remain in this state of Mechusar Kippurim, in this state of semi-impurity, until she brings all the sacrifices that she owes. Rather, as soon as she brings one set of korbanos yoledes, I think it might just really be the chatas, then she's already fully pure and she can eat sacrifices. She can eat kachim. And then she'll owe the rest as an obligation. If these sacrifices are meant to purify one, a person from this state of Mechusar Kippurim, so then if she still owes more of her birth sacrifices, Korbanos Yoledes, how could she already be pure, fully pure, just by bringing one set? Furthermore, what's the point of bringing the rest of them if she's already fully pure, if these are sacrifices of purification? These are five questions. I think that the key to unlocking all of them is the words of the Rambam, the words of Maimonides in source 25 in his book of mitzvot. There's an amazing comment that the Rambam has here where he really gives us a window into his own conceptual thinking. It's a bit of a rare phenomenon, so it's something to savor. The Rambam asks in source 25, if someone will ask me, why don't you count the sacrifices of the Mechusari Kapara, of these four people who are missing atonement, as one mitzvah, one commandment, Sheish lohem inyan echad yikabtzein, because they all seem to have the same point. They're all about the same theme and idea. V'hu chisur kapara, which is that all these people are missing some sort of atonement that's needed for their purification until they bring their sacrifice. The yeze min mimine hatara minatuma. And if so, these sacrifices should seemingly be a method of purification. Vayara uisha tomar, And here it's amazing. The Rambam tells you, here's how I would have described the mitzvah had it been like this. If this had been the way to look at the mitzvah, I would have said, a mitzvah plonis he, the following commandment is, shetzivanu, or maybe I should say precept in this case, that we are commanded, shelo tishlam taharas ktsas tmeim, zav zav yiletas mitzorah, ashakrivu karbon. He says, if that had been the way to look at this mitzvah, I would have counted the mitzvah like this. There's a mitzvah that the purification of certain people, these four people who have bodily impurity, will not be complete until they bring the following korban. Kimosha timneh tara b'mikvah mitzvah achas. Mischayva is a tamishiyah. Just like I counted, says the Rambam, the mitzvah of immersion in a mikvah as one mitzvah for all the different types of people, for all different sorts of impurity, there's one mitzvah that if you want to get rid of the impurity, you can go to the mikvah. So says the Rambam, seemingly, we should have approached the Mechusar Kippurim in that way. Seemingly, we should have had one mitzvah that says that in certain situations of bodily impurity, the way to become fully pure is to bring sacrifice. However, the Rambam says, and I'm not sure why I cut this out of the sword sheet, because this is important, so let me just pull this up. However, says the Rambam, this is not the case. This is not the correct way to look at these sacrifices. They aren't just methods of purification like a mikvah. Explains the Rambam, Hashem yodea, God knows, sheze hayaroi b'li safek, im haya korban kol echa me'elu harba mechusar kapara, korban echad lo yishtanem. Had all these four types of people, zav zava yoletas mitzoro, been required to bring the same types of sacrifices, the exact same sacrifice, then it would have been appropriate to count it as one mitzvah, like purification in mikvah, shehu min mimin hataros, which is just a method of purification. Ulam, however, mitzad hischalchus korbanosehem, because each of these four people, zav zava yoletas mitzora, has to bring different types of korbanos, sacrifice, different sacrifices. Kemosha tireh, hischayev limnos kol korban beyichud behechrech. Therefore, I'm forced to count each one's special obligation to bring their sacrifice as a separate mitzvah. Ki hadavar shebo tushlam taharasa echad, zulas hadavar shebo tushlam taharasa acher. Because what completes the purification of one is not the same as what completes the purification of the other. So the Rambam says very clearly that had all of the Mechusari Kapara been required to bring one type of korban, then we would have looked at this as simply another method of purification. It would have been very similar to the mitzvah of immersion in the mikvah. Again, just a method the Torah gives us to purify ourselves. However, the Rambam makes it very clear that because each of these four people, each of the four Mechusari Kapara, have to bring a different type of korban, something else is going on here. And the Rambam gets a little terse and doesn't fully explain, therefore, what really is going on. What really is the nature of these korbanos? If they aren't simply just a method of purification, you know, another, you know, just like a mikvah, what are they? What do they accomplish and what are they about? So there's a lot of evidence elsewhere in the Rambam that he took this conceptual shift that he describes in Sefer HaMitzvos, in the Book of Mitzvos, very seriously. At every stage, at every opportunity, the Rambam makes clear that a Mechusar Kapara, again, these four people who are missing atonement until they bring their sacrifices, isn't really tame, isn't really impure. His son, Rav Avraham and Rambam, in Source 28, spells this out very clearly. In a correspondence, he says, "Mashik sheis al daito atzodekas, that which you, Rav Daniel Habavli, my correspondent, asked on the Rambam, Ashramana tefuliyom mechusar kipurim zulas tame. Why did the Rambam count mechusar kipurim? We'll leave tefuliyom to the side for now, as a different category than someone who's impure, someone who's tame. Chashavta keima anafim mituma. You, Rav Daniel HaBavli, thought that a mechusar kapara is really just another type of tame, another type of impure person. Zeu tos nigla. This is a clear mistake. Ki hatuma nistalka b'tevila, because the impurity was already removed by immersion in the mikvah. Berachatz b'mayim v'taher, as the Torah says, when you wash in water, you're purified. That's the end of it. Vim ne'mar aleihem bistam mashi yoresh im tmeim. But if there are certain features of the mechusar kapara that seem to imply that they're tamei, ein hakavana ach ki chaser lahem hatara hashlema asher yashlimeim be'eze inyonim. All it really means is that they're missing the complete purification, which will perfect and complete their status in certain respects. V'lo tit'eh bishtatfus hashem. Don't be mistaken, don't be misled by the fact that we sometimes borrow the term tameh or impure to refer to the mechusar kapara. It's really something else entirely. Asher hiter rabim v'chein shleimim, asher navochu b'hem rabim, etc. He said, yeah, many people have gotten confused by this, because the truth is that a lot of Rishonim, a lot of medieval authorities, including Rashi, probably Tosfos, Rav Daniel HaBavli, probably the Ravid, thought that, yes, mechusar kapara, these four people who are missing atonement, are in fact tame, impure. Again, it's a very low level of impurity. It's only relevant to someone who wants to eat sacrifices and walk into the temple. But many Rishonim thought that this is a form of impurity. But Rav Avraham ben Rambam says, don't make that mistake. And his father, the Rambam, clearly held this. And the Mechusar Kippurim is not really tame. It's more like a virtual tumah. Treat him as if he's still impure for certain very rarefied purposes. Don't have time to go into all the examples in the Rambam, but this is very clear in a number of other halachos that the Rambam codifies. Just two clear examples in terms of the Rambam's classification. In the Rambam's Book of Mitzvos, what exactly is behind the entire order of that he gives to the 613 Mitzvos is not totally clear. However, the Rambam does have certain clear groupings in his Book of Mitzvos. So the Rambam has a grouping where he speaks about mitzvos of purity and impurity. That's where he discusses the mitzvah of mikvah, for example. And he has another grouping, another series of mitzvos that all come on the heels of each other in his Book of Mitzvos that discuss the laws of sacrifices. Where does he put this law of mechusar kapara? These mitzvos requiring these four people who had bodily impurity to bring sacrifices to complete their purification. Does he put them in the set of mitzvos of purity and impurity, or among the mitzvos of korbanos, the mitzvos of sacrifices? Well, if you check, you'll see he puts them among the mitzvos of sacrifices. In other words, this is primarily a law in the halachos, in the category of obligatory sacrifices, not primarily a law in the category of purification and methods of purification. He does the same thing in Mishneh Torah, in his code. The Rambam has a book called Tahara, a book called Purity, and he has a book called Korbanos, Sacrifices. Where does he discuss the halachos of Mechusrei Kapara, these four people who are missing some level of purification until they bring their sacrifices? He discusses them primarily in Hilchos Mechusari Kapara, in the Book of Sacrifices. So the Rambam's scheme of classification clearly shows us that he thought, like he spells out in Sefer HaMitzvos, that these are not primarily methods of purification, which would belong in the laws of purification and be similar to mikvah. These are primarily laws about obligatory sacrifices, which have certain implications which resemble issues of purity and impurity, which involve some sort of state of virtual impurity. So we have these four mitzvos in the Rambam for the Zav, Zava, Yoledes, and Mitzora to bring their korbanos, to bring their sacrifices. And There are two parts to the mitzvah. Part number one, the very situation of being a Zav Zav Yoledes Mitzora, who is completing that, finishing off that state of impurity, requires you to bring a sacrifice. Again, it's primarily a law classified in laws of sacrifices. However, part two of this mitzvah, of each of these mitzvahs, is that until you bring your sacrifice, you are a mechusar kapara. You are called someone who's missing atonement and you cannot yet eat sacrifices. You're still in a state of virtual impurity. To understand this a little better, I just want to read the formulation of the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Mechusari Kapara, where he discusses this category in source 29. The Rambam says there are four people who are called Mechusar Kapara. The Lama Nikru Mechusari Kapara. Why are they called people who are missing atonement? Shekol Echad Mehen, because each of these people, Afa Pisha Tiher Mitumaso, even though he has purified himself from his impurity, Adayin Hu Chaser, he's still missing something. The Rambam doesn't say he's still impure. No, he says, even though he's completed his purification, he's still chosk. He's still missing something. So that's why he's called a mechusar kapara. He's missing atonement. Below gomra taharoso, his purification has not yet finished. Kedei lecho b'kodshim, in order to be able to reach that pinnacle, that highest state of purity, to eat sacrifices. Ad shevi korbano, until he brings his sacrifice. The kodim shevi kaparaso, asur lecho b'kodshim, and until he brings that sacrifice, he cannot eat kodshim. And when the Rambam describes these mitzvos in a more pithy fashion, he describes them primarily as mitzvos to bring your korban in this situation. And then he says, as sort of part two, by the way, you're called mechusar kapara, and you can't eat sacrifices until you bring these korbanos. So each of these mitzvos has two aspects. It's an obligatory sacrifice, like many other situations that require one to bring a sacrifice, like if someone committed a sin, they have to bring a sacrifice. If, on certain holidays, you have to bring a sacrifice. So if you were in a state of bodily impurity of these four types, you would have to bring a sacrifice. But the mitzvah also has part two. Until you bring your sacrifice, you have a state of virtual impurity. What's the relationship between these two parts? So one way to look at it would be that the primary aspect of the mitzvah, again, this seems to be pretty clear in the Rambam, is the obligation to bring the sacrifice. However, the Torah sort of puts you in the penalty box, so to speak, until you bring the sacrifice. That until you bring that sacrifice, we're going to give you this state of impurity. However, I think there's something much deeper going on here. There are a lot of Gemaras, a lot of passages in the Talmud that indicate that what these sacrifices are primarily about, the primary theme and notion and purpose of these sacrifices is cleansing one, preparing one to be allowed to eat kodesh, to eat sacrifices. But again, this is problematic according to the approach we're developing in the Rambam. The Rambam seems to imply that the primary aspect of the mitzvah is the obligation to bring a sacrifice. Secondarily, until you bring the sacrifice, you're in a state of virtual impurity. So what are these sacrifices really about? What's their point? If you weren't really impure until you bring them, why is the Torah creating this new problem, this new status of virtual impurity until you bring the sacrifice? Now, usually when we have in life or in halacha a problem and a solution, the problem is conceptually and chronologically prior to the solution. It's kind of obvious. You have a problem, and to solve the problem, you invent a solution. However, here, the order seems to be backwards. I want to suggest what seems to come out for the Rambam is that this problem of being mechusar kapara, of being missing atonement, lacking this special sacrifice, and therefore being in a state of virtual impurity until you bring it, is really a problem that was created to give the solution something to solve. The solution is the korbanos mechusari kapara, is bringing these sacrifices of mechusari kapara. The zav yoladim es mitzora, bringing their sacrifices. However, secondarily, the Torah invented this new status of mechusar kapara, of virtual impurity, until you bring the sacrifices, in order to give these sacrifices a certain character and a certain nature. Again, these sacrifices, I want to suggest, in the understanding of the Rambam, could be termed a solution for which a problem was invented to give it something to solve. What do I mean? When the Torah commands a sacrifice, commands a korban, we can really distinguish between three elements of that command. The mechayev of the korban, in other words, the factor which triggers the obligation to bring the sacrifice. The kiyum of the korban, the nature and the theme of the sacrifice itself, which defines its very nature. And thirdly, the practical result, which is achieved, the practical legal halachic result, which is achieved by having brought that korban, by having brought that sacrifice. And when it comes to understanding the korbanos of the mechusari kapara, it's critical to distinguish between these three elements. What the Rambam is telling us very clearly is that at the conclusion, at the pinnacle of the purification process from these states of bodily impurity, the Torah wants you to bring these sacrifices. In other words, the mechayiv, the legal trigger of the obligation to bring the sacrifice, is merely the fact that you're in a situation of completing your purification from these four types of bodily impurity. The truth is that you're already completely pure in a strict legal sense at this point. However, the Torah felt, for whatever reason, that it was important in these situations of bodily impurity to add a final cherry on top to this purification process, that beyond going to the mikvah, you should also bring a sacrifice. A sacrifice which will constitute the pinnacle and the crowning final stage of your purification process. Problem is, you're already pure, so how can this sacrifice relate to your purification process? Ah, here's where the Torah creates a problem to give the solution something to solve. Here's where the Torah says, you know what? We're going to give you this status of virtual impurity, of mechusar kapara, until you bring this sacrifice, thereby coloring the nature of these sacrifices and turning them into sacrifices which have a theme of hechsher hagavra l'tosefes kedusha v'tayah, of preparing the person who brings them to reach a higher stage, a higher madriga of purity and sanctity. And that seems to be what these korbanos are all about. So in other words, these korbanos aren't really just about achieving the practical result of allowing you to eat kachin. They're not like a mikvah. They aren't just a practical mechanism, in the understanding of the Rambam, to achieve purification. You've already gone to the mikvah. You're done with that. However, in these situations of bodily impurity, the Torah wants you to reach a higher level. It's kind of amazing. Someone who had not been impure at all, no problem. He can remain in his sort of neutral state of being not impure. Or someone who contracted lesser forms of impurity, impurity via contact with certain dead animals, let's say. That's a lower form of impurity. There, the Rambam says, whether you choose to become purified or not is up to you, your choice. However, someone who contracted, these four people who contracted more severe forms of bodily impurity, which are discussed in Tazria Mitzora, here the Torah says it's not enough that you should get yourself back to point A where you started of basic purity. Here you have to rise to an even higher level. I'm going to try to wrap up very quickly. How do I know that, especially according to the Rambam, there's such a thing as being even more pure than pure? There's an amazing comment to the Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnah in Parah, in source 33, where he says that someone who contracted impurity through the dead, through contact with the dead, and then had the waters of the Parah Aduma, of the red heifer, sprinkled upon him, is on a higher madrega, a higher level of purity than someone who had never become impure in the first place. And the Rambam gives there a halachic ramification to that. So we see that purity and impurity isn't just a binary, aren't just two binary categories in halacha. It's possible to rise to even higher madrigos, higher levels of purity than basic purity. And that seems to be what these korbanos are about. So again, someone, these four people, these mechusari kapara, who had contracted severe states of bodily impurity, they have an obligation, not just an option, to reach the pinnacle, the highest level possible of purity by bringing these korbanos, these sacrifices of mechusari kapara, which are sacrifices which are all about increasing one's level of purity and sanctity. Now, to conclude, that was the halachic analysis. What does this all mean? Let's say on the level of Tamei HaMitzvos, on the level of the reasons for the commandments. Again, as a halachic analysis, what we've said until now would perhaps suffice. But I want to conclude with some symbolic speculations, as I term the final section of the source sheet. What's Tumah V'Tahara really all about? What's purity and impurity really all about? Well, that's an extremely tricky question. There are many different sources of impurity in halacha. It's hard to find a common denominator. My understanding, based on what I've seen from the Rishonim, medieval commentators, and what I've heard from my Rebbe, my father-in-law, Rebbe Rosenzweig, is that the primary common denominator of impurity in halacha is things which connect one in a very visceral, intensive way with one's physicality and material nature. Sort of the opposite of spirituality. Being fully ensconced in physicality and materiality. For that reason, we said earlier, according to the Rambam, that unless you're planning on entering the temple, it isn't really a big deal whether you're pure or impure. Judaism is not an ascetic or fundamentally mystical religion where transcending physicality is a goal unto itself. The obsession with Tumah V'Tahara, purity and impurity, just for its own sake, is something that the rabbis in certain places seem to actually look down upon. Generally, the purpose of transcending physicality is to allow one to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to connect to God. In other words, like the Rambam says, unless you're trying to enter the temple or to eat sacrifices to connect with God, whether you're pure or impure doesn't really matter. However, certain states of bodily impurity, let's take the most extreme example, the Metzora, right? The star of Parshas Tazria Metzora. The person who has this halachic skin disease, sometimes people call leprosy, etc. That person is Meshulach Chutz L'Machaneh. He has to leave the sanctified camp of Bnei Yisrael, which is centered around the Mikdash or the Mishkan. Someone who's been in a state of deep physical impurity, in a state of becoming fully confronted in a very intensive way with one's own physicality and material nature, has perhaps experienced a sense spiritually and in some ways halachically of distance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, distance from God. Perhaps it's in this very situation where the Torah tells us, now that you've been healed, now that you've moved beyond this state of bodily impurity, now it's not just an option to become purified. Now it's critical, now it's obligatory that you should reach the highest levels of Tahara, the highest levels of purity, by bringing these special korbanos of mechusar kapara. Again, unfortunately, we don't have time to explain what exactly the machlokas tanaim is. If anyone wants to stay on afterwards, we can try to explain that. And to really conclude, the Sefer HaBatim Rav David HaKochavi in source 39 explains that these types of korbanos can be understood with the parable of someone who comes to greet the king who has not yet seen him for a very long time. Therefore, they have to pave the way. They have to enter into the inner sanctum of the king again with special gifts, or, you know, in the nimshal, with special korbanos. Again, people who have been in a more extreme state of bodily impurity, who have perhaps felt distant and remote from God, perhaps it's specifically for them that the Torah created these special korbanos, these special sacrifices, which are all about reaching the highest possible levels of purity and sanctity, and the Torah obligated one in this situation to bring these korbanos and created a special state called mechusar kapara, someone who's missing atonement, in order to give, to color these sacrifices, these korbanos, with that nature of being sacrifices of increasing one's level of purity and sanctity. So we'll conclude here, and I'll be happy to take questions.
I really love what you said. I have a different explanation to, and I'd like to send it to you if you can send me your email address. Could you do
sure.
that?
Sure. Sure. I'll put it in the chat. Does that work?
Would you do that, please?
Sure.
And my explanation, you have absolutely blown my mind, because I have a theory about this that all of the things you said confirm my theory. It doesn't mean that I'm right, but it absolutely blows my mind.
Thank you.
I can't believe that you gave this to Vatoro. It's fantastic. But I see it. Ephraim, I've just seen it. A.S. Ephraim, something like that, right?
Asher Ephraim one, yeah.
Asher Ephraim. Thank you so much, and I'm going to send you my Kiddush.
Okay, I'm looking forward. Thank you.
I hope.
Rabbi, isn't the idea of korbanot in general to get closer to higher, not only mechusrei kapara, anytime? That's the basic idea. That's what it's called, korban.
That's true. I definitely agree with what you're saying, but each korban has a slightly different specialized function. You're definitely correct that in a general sense, all korbanos, in many ways, that's what the meaning of the word korban, right? To come close. It's part of the meaning of the whole idea of korbanos, like you're saying. But I think that each of the korbanos are about coming close to God in a different way and for a different reason and triggered by a different situation and occasion. So what I'm arguing is that, again, we have some korbanos that are primarily about atoning for sin. Some korbanos are a pure gift to God to express thanksgiving, happiness.
Unpure is also a sort of a sin.
Right, exactly.
When a person is unpure, meaning something happened, either deliberate or not deliberate, happened, then moved him away. That's the idea of a korban. And the idea that you're talking about some virtual cleanness, it's very difficult for me to understand, because we are practical. To be a Jew, to be the Jewish religion is a practical. It's not virtual.
Well, I'll have to disagree with you on that one. I think we're both. I think we're a nation that has 613 commandments, like you say. We're a very practical nation. But we're also a nation that's centered around a book, around the Torah. And we were, you know, founded at Sinai, which wasn't just a moment of receiving laws of what to do, but it was also a revelation of God and an amazing spiritual and intellectual experience. So, and, you know, the rabbis can never emphasize enough the importance of the study of Torah, both practical and conceptual. So I think these are both really essential parts of Judaism. And these sacrifices, I'm arguing, are specifically about coming close to God through the method of purification. And I'm arguing that that's why the Torah created this virtual status of mechusar kapara, of virtual impurity, in order to give some, like you're suggesting, the Torah does want to give some practical teeth to this notion that these karbanos are going to have a theme of purification. So how does the Torah do that? By telling you, you're not quite there. You're not quite purified yet. We're going to give you this virtual impurity.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. It's getting late. I think in the Besson Reed asked us a quick question. I want to thank you very much for your love to Shashir. And Antum Vatara, thank you for bringing it to light. And pleasure. And say hi to your father again, your parents, of course, and all good things. And tomorrow morning, of course, my Shir in the Siddur at 9:15 a.m. Sunday, of course, we're having our Yom Iyun, 9 speakers on the Haggadah Shel Pesach. I assume most of you know about that. Beginning 9:15 till 2 o'clock, we'll go through the Haggadah from Kadesh till Shulchan Aruch, Arech, and that'll be 9 speakers for half an hour each with 1 15-minute break. And then continuing next week, we'll have every day at 1 p.m. Pesach Shir, and then on Tuesday, we'll have 2 Shir back-to-back. Second one is going to be on the history of the Seder plate, actually, an artistic Shir. And, okay, we look forward to learning with you. Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, and everybody be well. Besorah Tovat. Thank you very much.
Thank you again. That was fantastic.
Thank you for your wonderful Shir. It was really good.
Okay, Laila Tov, everybody.